I live in Israel. This season is dedicated to the memory of the 1,400 of my countrymen who were massacred on October 7th and the 240 people that were kidnapped and are being held hostage by the terrorist organization Hamas. Hopefully they will be returned to their families as soon as possible, and hopefully this terrible war will be able to come to a peaceful end very soon. And welcome to minute 64 of season 6 of Movie Around Minute, the daily podcast where we take a Capra-esque journey through the 1946 classic It's a Wonderful Life, 1 minute at a time. I'm Rob, and joining me once again today are Justin and Caroline from the old movie Time Machine. Welcome back to the show, guys.
Hey, Rob, thank you so much for having us back yet again. Here we are. Yeah,
it feels like it's been like weeks since we've talked, something like that. You know, even though it was just yesterday.
I know.
Like one of those things.
I've missed you, guy.
Yeah. Yeah. So, minute 64 begins with Bert and Ernie continuing to serenade the couple and ends with Martini acting quite proud. So, we ended things yesterday with, you know, George thoroughly being surprised by this very nice and unexpected honeymoon or wedding night in this the old Granville house, and you know, Mary did what she can to make it as romantic as possible, even by getting Ernie and Bert to serenade them, which Jim Henson will be very proud of.
He really would be. I mean, these are good friends. They're trying to get their guy lucky right now, and they're standing out in the rain to do it. Like, they didn't even wait in the hallway or in the foyer entranceway or anything like that. They're just out in the elements.
Singing. That's right. It's bold. And they're mm-hmm. serenading actually quite nicely the way that they're doing it.
Oh yeah, lovely harmonies. Very nice.
Yeah, I mean, you know who the actor is who plays Bert, right? Because Bert's a very famous actor. Ward Bond.
Ward Bond.
From Wagon Train, and he was known for being in a lot of I think Howard Hawks movies. He was in a lot of westerns. Let's put it that way.
Gotcha. Okay, he's one of those guys. All right, then I've seen him around.
He was a good friend of John Wayne's. He's in a lot of John Wayne movies.
Okay, then definitely seen him around.
Yeah, and Ernie was played by Frank Phelan, who was. Another guy who he has like 224 IMDb credits. So he's been in a few movies here and there, or movies and TV shows.
Yeah.
You know, I mean, just to compare with what Ward Bond is, Ward Bond has 278, and he was on 133 episodes of Wagon Train. So this was a very prolific era. I'm assuming that based on, you know, the fact that you guys deal with old movies, you probably are familiar with this, that, you know, a lot of the actors and actresses at the time were basically jumping during the day between different sets and being in so many different movies, TV shows, whatever it is, you know, and they would have to keep changing, you know, changing wardrobe and changing their personas, because it's here, you know, sometimes you might be in a Western, sometimes you could be in a, I guess you can call this a contemporary movie at the time, just jumping back and forth. So it's just amazing.
I'm sure you see this as well, just doing your research and everything, but I've certainly noticed researching, you know, roles, actors in our movies that we watch from the 40s, 50s, and 60s, that, I mean, there's a generation of actors who have this incredible career arc starting in vaudeville, and mm-hmm. the stage, like pre-film, and then they do, like you say, 500 different films, and then television starts, and then they end up becoming, they sort of like age out of the industry through by guest starring in every television show that ever airs. Like, there's so many of those people.
And those of them that survived in the 1970s were on like tons of TV shows as guest stars, you know, in order
Starsky and Hutch and Love American
Love Boat. you know.
Of course, and, yeah. I mean, some, Streets of San Francisco.
A friend of the show, Jim O'Kane, always talks about the fact that that in the 70s, in order to be able to get, like, I think it was old age insurance or something like that, you know, they had to appear in a certain number of capacities during the course of the year, stuff like that. He's a big fan of the airplane, the airport series. So right. So there you just got tons of cameos from people, including Jimmy Stewart, you know, who just have not much to do in the movie, but, you know, okay, they get their paycheck and then they can, you know, their bills will continue to be paid.
Exactly. And it pays off for the show, too. My favorite collection of cameo guest stars is Murder, She Wrote. Like, every episode of every season of Murder, She Wrote has somebody in it where you're like, oh, it's that guy. I love that guy.
Right. My problem with
or gal or whatever.
Right. My problem with guest stars in those type of shows is that usually they're the murderer. So you already know from the start that that's the murderer. It's like, right. Oh, here's Dick Van Dyke. He must be the murderer. You know, you see that on Law and Order also.
The murderer.
Right. Now, Law and Order, you find that also quite often. Yep. You know, you see people and you're like, okay, there's the murderer. they're not going to just take on a little role.
Yeah, I don't think they're joining the main cast, but I think they might be integral to the story we're about to watch.
That's right. I mean, a friend of mine got me recently interested in watching all of the Columbo. Yeah. So I've seen all, I think it was 70-something Columbo movies in the last few months.
Mm-hmm.
And what's great about that is that you find out in the first scene that this guest star is the murderer. So it's not even, it doesn't come as a surprise. The surprise in that show is how does Columbo figure it out? You know, that's
exactly.
Yeah. So, that was always fun to watch with that.
That show's incredible. Yeah.
Yeah.
Really proud of you for watching the entire thing recently. Good for you.
Yeah. I spent November and December going through just about every one of them. In order.
Okay, great.
So yeah, it was anyone who's interested can go onto my website and you can see reviews of every single one of them. You know, so.
Oh, I will definitely be doing that for sure.
Yeah.
For sure. Love Columbo.
So basically we have Ernie and Bert, and it's great that you see when they're serenading, you just see the silhouette of George and Mary in the postered up windows. You know, it's not even.
Yes, very. Mm-hmm.
Right.
Artfully framed.
Yes.
Very romantic
scene. Dramatic moment.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. But yes. The rain that's falling on the two of them does not look real at all because it's falling too straight on their hats.
There's no other weather happening. It's just gravity and water.
That's right. That's right. It seems as if somebody's on top just pouring water down.
Yeah. It seems miserable out there. I don't know. These guys, they're really doing their friend a real solid here, I think,
yeah.
Because that is not pleasant to see.
That's right. And we find out through the course of the movie that they're both married. So, you know, it shows that they want for their friend what they apparently have. You know, even though their wives are probably both going to be very upset that they're coming home, you know, and about to get, get the pneumonia.
Pneumonia, yeah, right. Well, I'm sure they all understand. I'm sure somebody else has, back in the day, somebody summoned local law enforcement to tape up posters over their windows, too, of their love shack. So I'm sure they've all been there. We've all been there.
Yeah,
we've all taped up posters for our friends' love affairs.
Yes, of course, especially about liver pills. Yeah.
Yes, and tires. Don't forget the tires.
Of course. How can you forget the tires? And then the shot goes inside, and we actually get to see George and Mary kissing. They're quite passionate and
it's a good kiss. Yeah.
Yeah. And I mean, obviously we can see that we know George has had a really difficult day and this is the perfect response from his wife who now who understands what he's been going through. Basically, you know, she's not giving him grief over the fact that where have you been all day?
Right.
You know, it's, I'm glad that you were able to help everyone else. And now now we're going to find quality time for the two of us. You know, that type of thing.
And she's also kind of, I imagine the kiss is a bit of a relief for her because I think, you know, yesterday we saw her look a little apprehensive about his reaction to the house, correct?
Mm-hmm.
Like, correct. She seems to be like waiting for his response to, oh, by the way, we live in this house now. This is ours. This is our home sort of thing. So
right.
That's nice.
We bought this house from Potter.
Yeah. Yes.
We got a good deal from Potter.
I was going to say, at least George wasn't like, oh my God, honey, this house is going to require so many renovations. Because he really could have been tabulating, just even fixing the leaks that they have.
Yeah, it could have been a total husband meltdown. Just like, what
That's
have you
right.
done? No.
That's right. Well, we'll find out over the next few weeks that it takes her like 12 years to renovate the house. So they're doing it little by
That's
little.
true.
It isn't,
Right,
it,
right.
she didn't do it overnight. You know, she,
No, it's an opportunity. It's a beautiful opportunity for them to build their nest.
Yes.
Love to see it. Yeah.
That's right. And as they're embracing, she whispers into his ear and goes, "Remember the night that we broke some windows in that in this old house? This is what I was
Ah,
born."
yes. Aw.
And I mean, this is great because I mean, we talked about this obviously a few months ago when we were dealing with them breaking the windows in the house, which little did they know that this was going to be their house, and they probably would have broken less windows if that was the case.
That's a fair point.
But what, you know, Mary refused to tell him at the time what her wish was, even though he told her what his wish was. His wish was to, you know, travel the world and whatever. And so I guess the old saying that if you tell your wish, it won't come true, that's what happened to George. She didn't tell hers, and we all now know that she got what she wanted.
Well, you know, most women know how to get what they want.
Okay, that's true. That's true. Even if you have to wait, was it 5 or 6 years till you get it?
Yeah.
6 years for Mary to wait for George to finally realize that that she wants him and she wants this old broken down house, you know.
Well, if you think
Seriously.
about it, more than because you know that that dream, that wish was happening back when she was a little girl. So longer than even the 6 years from making the wish.
Right. That's true.
She was playing like the long, long game.
That's a big
That is very
buildup
true.
for George. I mean, it's tough to live up to that kind of pining.
I don't
Good luck
think
to him.
he knows that there was that much pining
No, not at all.
Involved. Is that
We've talked about this numerous times. He is
right.
completely clueless.
He's oblivious.
Yes.
Yeah.
Completely. Yeah.
So it's probably for the best. In this case, ignorance is bliss. If he knew how long she'd been waiting for this moment, you might freak out a little bit. I don't know if I can handle that.
Well, she's telling him right now that she waited 6 years, so he's already starting to
Yeah.
understand a little bit. He, de you know, as Caroline said, he doesn't know the, you know, the half of it, because it
Right.
goes all the way back to
You
when
know
she
what?
whispered in his deaf ear, you know,
Right.
when he gave her all the coconut that she didn't want.
That's
You know, she
right.
said, "I
He
hate
really did,
coconut,"
yeah.
and he just piled it on.
No.
You poured it over.
Most
Oh, yeah. Yeah.
husbands don't know the half of it, so
Okay.
it's
All
better
right.
that way.
Yeah, okay.
Probably, probably. So I started thinking about the idea of wishes. You know, so the official definition of a wish is it's a hope or desire for something to come true. Okay, it's quite often used in fiction. It's a you know it's a plot device that's used. Quite often, sometimes in folklore or fantasy settings, you know, where someone gets to make a wish, or they want their wish to come true or be granted, or things like that. Obviously, you know, the first thing that probably comes to everyone's mind when you say that is probably like Aladdin and the genie, you know, like getting wishes and stuff like that. There are a lot of different cultures that have different basis for wishing and stuff like that. So, for instance, in Chinese tradition, they would write wishes on red ribbons and tie them onto a tree, hoping for them to come true. We're all familiar with the idea of, you know, blowing out candles in our birthday cake.
Of
Sometimes
course, yeah.
seeing a shooting star, tossing a coin into a wishing well, breaking a wishbone,
An eyelash. If you have an
eyelash.
eye, if
That's
you catch
right.
an eyelash and you blow it off a finger, you
That's
should
right.
make a wish. If your necklace clasp gets down to where your pendant is, you're supposed to make a wish when you put it back.
Ah, okay. That one I'd never heard of.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
Blowing on a dandelion. Sometimes there are some Far East Coast cultures that also have the idea of sky lanterns, where you write something on a piece of paper, and then you attach it to a lantern that you know, sort of like a balloon. just come. Mm-hmm. But most people believe that the wishes will only come true if they're kept a secret from other people.
I was just going to say, I mean, there does seem to be a real spectrum of wishery that happens. There's very informal wishing all the way to very formalized. We probably need like a contract and an NDA type of wish, you know, starting from like, I wish the sun would come out today, like a real easy kind of like idle wish, and then progressing across to, like you say, the very deep.
I wish I had $1 million.
Compact that you make. with your birthday cake, you know, where it's like just you and the cake, the candles on the cake, you guys have this relationship, you share the secret of your deepest desire, and it's very official. And if you break, you know, if you tell anybody, obviously that contract is broken. And, you know, the, like you say, Aladdin and the genie, there was a whole bunch of obstacles and things there, rules there that had to be followed. So, yeah, it's just it's a crazy concept that we've all apparently just endorsed. We're all in on wishes.
Yeah.
I wish all the time.
Yeah, we all do.
Well, I think
I'm assuming we all do.
Yeah, there's something to be said for like manifesting and
right.
having mm-hmm. that positive right. thought, mm-hmm. and that, you know, sometimes you don't want to tell everyone what your goal is because it's so, or your wishes because it's so precious that
right
you know you don't necessarily want it publicly shared, because if it doesn't come true, it would be devastating. So I think that there's that to think about, like if you were to reveal it, then everyone would know, and then they would be like, oh, well, you know, Mary and George, you know, Mary's just been after George this whole time.
Right.
And, you know, like people would have gossip about it instead of it being a continuously positive thing.
Right.
Well, and you're kind of you're playing the odds, too. Like if there's yeah. it's sort of like a deathbed conversion sort of thing. Like if there's a chance that this wish will not manifest if I tell somebody or, you know, go through the procedure the wrong way, then like I'm definitely going to follow whatever rules are in place. I will do that if it's going to improve right. the chances of the wish succeeding.
Right.
Right.
That makes sense.
Well, a wish is a dream your heart makes when you're
I've heard
asleep.
That.
That sounds like a Disney.
Very well put, though. You should write that down. That's good. That's good.
It should be a song. I mean, it's by lyrical, a little yeah. cricket.
Yeah. Sounds something like that. You know, maybe something from 1941 or something like that. I don't know.
Mm-hmm.
Or 1940.
Something hand drawn.
1940. 1941 was already Dumbo. So there. Sorry.
Right.
1940.
Right.
1940. Yeah. And then he responds to her by just saying, "You're wonderful." So I think that's actually a good response for someone who's very clueless. You know. You know.
It really is, actually. It kind of covers a lot of bases.
That's right.
Yeah.
I also had the thought, since this was our like section of the movie to really focus on, but I'd rewatched the whole thing. But I had this thought when he said that, is really that like Mary is what makes his life wonderful, and it's a wonderful life. The name of the movie,
yes.
The fact that he's looking at her saying, "You're wonderful."
Great. Okay. I've actually,
that's,
I think you're right. 100%. I've heard numerous times, you know, people that go back and look at older movies and try to understand, you know, whether the storyline is unfair to maybe the female side of the story or anything like that. And when they tried doing it for It's a Wonderful Life, they came to the realization that this is one of those movies that is completely the opposite. Without the female, without Mary's input, then this story would not have been as impactful as it is. Even though in some places it's subtle, but it's very very impactful, everything that she does, but even if it's done in a subtle way. And this is a perfect example of it. She's here on the one hand supporting him, but on the other hand, she's there to help build along with him this wonderful life. So I think you hit it right on the nose there. So yes.
Yeah, agreed.
Yeah.
And then, you know, as he says that to her, you know, we get a shot outside once again of Bert and Ernie continuing to finish their serenade there and just look out at the silhouette of the two of them. And it's great as they do it, because they first they're looking at the silhouette, then they at the same time look at each other, and Ernie gets the urge, and he pulls Bert's hat up a little bit above his forehead and kisses him on the forehead. And Bert doesn't like that as much.
It's a very
and changes
Looney Tunes bit of comedy pacing. Yes. And it's very like honking Elmer Fudd's nose type of humor. Yes. I love it.
Yes. But here, these are two people that are friends, you know, that are doing right. it. As opposed right. to, you know, the Looney Tunes humor, usually they're enemies that are doing it to one another.
That's true. Yeah.
You know,
yeah.
They're making us laugh, but they're not necessarily doing it mm-hmm. in order to be friendly to one another. You know, it's right. it's more like a ha ha, I've got you. You know, I was able to, you know, to touch you and then run away. That type of thing.
Right.
Here it's more. Right. And Bert has a great response by just straightening his hat and then pouncing on Ernie's hat. Yeah. And we see all the water splash all over yeah. the place when he does it.
Mm-hmm. That dead water, that dead weatherless water just pouring down yeah. on these poor guys.
That's right.
Get inside.
They're getting paid good money to be rained on.
Yeah, that's true.
And then the shot changes and we're now at it's now daytime and we see a man. We don't know who he is. This is the first time we've actually seen him in the movie. And somebody says to him, Martini, you rented a new house? And he goes, rent? And he starts laughing and he goes, and he turns around and goes, you hear what he say, Mr. Bailey? And then we see George and George responds, what's that? He goes, I own the house. So this is a great way for, I mean, we'll get more into this tomorrow. This is a great way for us to learn, you know, that George's business is not just something that's theoretical. We actually get to see how he's affecting other people's lives. You know, again, we only get 10 seconds of it in this particular minute, but we see just from the expression of this man, Martini, you know, about the fact that he is so happy that he's now able to own his own house. And, you know, we see the way that they're packing things up is just great. Cause they're, you know, nowadays when anyone moves, you know, you get movers and you get, you know, you put boxes and you do stuff in an orderly fashion. And what they're doing here is you just see them, someone's bringing a chair and someone's putting it like a little table on.
It's very ad hoc.
Yes.
Just like armfuls of clothing, you know, just sort of like they just looked around and in 10 minutes grabbed everything they could carry and that was moving.
That's right.
Like, is that how they did that?
That's right. I mean, you even see George. I mean, if George is carrying a box that has, I think, a duck in it. I'm not sure if that's a duck or a swan or a chicken. Or a rooster even. I don't even know. I don't think it's a rooster. But there's some
sure. Well, yeah, you don't want to rent those. That's one that they own. So, like, unlike the house, that's probably their property to keep.
Well, no, it actually makes sense because you can just see from that, and we'll get more into this tomorrow. But they probably have their own hen, you know, laying eggs for them so that they have eggs. They're he's definitely paying rent again tomorrow. We'll find out where he's paying this rent. Or where he was living up until now. But I mean, it all really fits in together by saying, okay, these are people that are trying to scrape by as much as they can. And George and the building and loan have actually helped them to move one step further.
Yes. And it's a very American ideal.
Yes.
I think that's being projected yes. here. This is the American dream.
And this is the American dream, before, you know, of what's going on. I mean, this is still 1934, 1935, something like that, where this is happening also. You know, this is in the middle of the Depression. That here is this exactly. immigrant. Okay, we can assume that Martini is an immigrant based on the way he sounds. You know, not to put labels, but that is what it seems like. And here he's, you know, through the help of the building and loan, or through the help of George, we don't know specifically, we can assume it's the building and loan, but through the help of George, he's actually able to move into his own house, you know, which is great.
Absolutely.
Right.
And I know we're going to talk about the moving more tomorrow, but just before we leave this gentleman, I did want to talk about the older gentleman who's asking Martini about the new house, just because his look that he's got in this scene, the leather jacket and the jeans and the hat and everything, like, that's he's a fashion icon for me. Like, that is how I like to dress, and he's really doing it. So yeah, Dust Bowl septuagenarian, that's my style, and I'm sticking with it.
Well, it looks like
every time I see someone dressed like that, I immediately think, oh, Justin's gonna want to talk about this guy. Yeah,
exactly. Well, look at that jacket. Oh, I like that. Every time.
Well, I mean, he looks to me somewhat like Indiana Jones with the way that he's dressed.
That's kind of my style, man. That's what I go for. I like it.
So you're
yeah, he's ready to capture an idol and you know, punch a fascist in the face for sure.
There you go. Even though he has probably no idea what a fascist is at this time, but
not at this point. I mean, yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. Okay, that's fair. But yeah, he does look like it. And look at how, if you want to talk about you know, the way that they're dressed, look how Martini is dressed. You know, Martini is dressed like a businessman. Mm-hmm. You know, we'll find out later what type of business he has later in the movie. But, mm-hmm. you know, when you're moving, you usually will put on, clothes that are similar to your Dust Bowl stepped in Nigerian.
Right.
Then,
yeah. Rather than the double-breasted woolen suit. Yeah,
that's right. But
I'm sure these people would all be appalled if they saw how we dress today. They would be like,
yeah, that's true.
That's probably true.
Oh my God.
Yeah. Yeah. But I think it also, I think they're trying to show us about Martini that, you know, this might be the way he dresses all the time and that he doesn't have money to buy other types of clothing. You know, he knows that for his work, for his business, he needs to dress this way. So this is the type of clothes that he has, you know, spent his money on.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I think that might be something they're trying to tell us here also, because again, this is a guy who's been renting for however long he's been living there, you know, and his neighbor is shocked that he's actually able to go afford to buy a house as opposed to be renting one. So it says that Martini is not overly wealthy. So if he's going to spend money on something, so he's going to spend on something that he needs for his business. So therefore, he's going to buy a good suit. Now, again, I don't know if I would be moving in that suit regardless, because he's going to get it a little dirty along the way. But, oh, well.
That's true. Now, I know that, like, it's right around here. I don't know if it's today or tomorrow, but at some point, it's a very human moment from Giuseppe where he's sort of like, As soon as the ink is dry on the paper, he's like, this place is a dump. I'm going to my own house. Like, he's very excited about how bad the house is that he's leaving and how nice the new house
right.
is.
Right. Tomorrow we'll get a little more into that. Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah. All right. So that's all I have for today's minute. Do you guys have anything else for this one?
Oh, I think that covers it for me.
Okay, great.
No, I'm just really honored that we got to talk about sort of like the namesake moment in this particular minute.
That's true.
That Mary's just wonderful.
She is. She really is.
Well, you see, you picked well. Or you got picked well, yes. Either way you want to look at it.
Yeah.
It was, you wished, okay, here they go. You wished well and your wish came true. You waited patiently.
Now we must have followed all the rules.
That's right. There you go. So every Thursday, we have a segment called Jimmy Stewart Thursday, where my guests will give their top five Jimmy Stewart performances. So we're going to once again do this in snake fashion. You guys can decide who's going to go first. You know, we'll go five from one of you, then number five of the second one, then the same person will get four, and then we'll go to the other person's four, and then three. You guys remember how we did this earlier the week, right?
I've got it figured out. All right, now. I know I struggled with
it. I know you did. That's why I was trying to explain it properly, you know, just to make sure that you have it
it's
firmly
good to
in
have
your memory.
Refresher. We'll see.
Mm-hmm. There you go. Mm-hmm.
But
do
I
you
think
want
I'm
me
ready
to start, for... Justin?
Yeah, I think you should start, Carolyn.
Okay, but we're going from five to our
That's right. You move your way up from five.
Okay, so my number five is Jimmy Stewart's performance in Bell, Book, and Candle.
Okay.
Because he just seemed to be so immune to Kim Novak and how saucy and wonderful she was until she had to use her magic to get Jimmy Stewart to fall in love with her.
She had to enchant him. It's craziness. Yeah. It's peak Kim Novak. It's insanity.
Just staring at him, lounging on a couch, and he's just like, well, I don't know.
Apparently, he's very good at playing those type of roles, because this movie is another example of that.
Yeah, exactly.
That's true.
All right.
So, Snake Style, it's now my turn for number
that
five.
That is correct.
Right? I've mastered the system. Well, we'll see. The jury's still out.
Don't worry. You'll have another chance five, tomorrow also. So that's good. Yeah.
Oh, fantastic. That's right. Yep. Okay. I got to focus here. Got to do snake fashion properly. So I wanted to do a Western. And he was, of course, in several classic Westerns. But I've chosen Winchester 73 here. If only because the cowboy that he plays in this movie is just kind of cool, and it's rare that you see Jimmy Stewart be legitimately a cool guy in any movie. You know, he's usually more complicated or damaged or sort of leading man in a traditional sense, like It's a Wonderful Life. But Winchester 73, boy, that's a classic dad movie.
But you being know, like able to shoot a coin, that's what you need it for.
Oh, so cool, right?
Yes.
I mean, it's just a great Western top to bottom, but he is also excellent in it. And then, you know, bonus, of course, is the man who shot Liberty Valance. He's a different type of character in that, but another excellent Western. Now, Snake Style, number four.
That's right.
I'm going to choose Mr. Smith Goes to Washington, which I think he's playing a character similar to the George Bailey, the sort of, again, heroic American ideal, you know, archetype. And it's just some of the more powerful scenes that really hold up in cinema, you know, decades later. And it's just it's a great performance.
Yeah.
All around. Hard recommend.
All right. Great. Caroline, you're up.
I'm going to my number four, which I have as Rear Window, which is another example of very confusingly, I do not understand why Jimmy Stewart is just trying to not date Grace Kelly. I'm so confused about it, but great movie. Again, a great performance by everyone in it. And somehow he is just denying another, like one of the most beautiful women ever in the course of history. He's just like, no, we can't date.
Cause she's a princess and he didn't have proof that he's a prince.
I suppose. There you go.
That would be a reason. There is zero reason within the context of that film.
No, of course not.
I mean, I would feel better if it was like, well, I'm not sure about my royal lineage, so I don't know if this will work. I mean, that would be something. This is just, I don't know what this is. It's crazy.
And she is throwing herself at him in this film, and he's just like, well.
Yeah.
Well,
I think he's just scared to, you know, that to get involved in an accomplice.
Yeah. I think so. That's probably true. Yeah.
All right, you're up again with your number three, Carolina.
Okay, so my number three is Philadelphia Story. I actually really like love all the performances in this film. I think it's so much fun. You know, great cast with Cary Grant and Katharine Hepburn and Jimmy Stewart. But I think he's very fun and charming and sweet in this particular film. So
okay, and he won an Oscar for it, so it means you were not the only person who enjoys what he did here.
Yeah.
All right.
And my number three, I'm going to choose Alfred Hitchcock's Rope, because I feel like this is a different type of performance that we see from Jimmy. This kind of, I feel like this falls between his like traditional leading man roles and his later, I can't believe that this woman wants to be my partner roles. This is just somewhere in the middle, like middle age Stewart. And he's just very, he's less of the blatant good guy. And he's just like a much more complicated, philosophical, deep thinking type of character who catches on to the plot pretty quickly. So I think it's a must see. I think he's great in that film.
Okay, great choice.
Thank you. And then number two, see, I've got to figure it out. I'm going to choose the spotlight film, It's a Wonderful Life. Once again, thank you so much for giving me a reason to watch this movie. Very exciting. Loved it. And he is fantastic in this film. And that's, I totally get it. I get the leading man appeal, and this is an excellent version of that.
All right. Great.
So my number two is also It's a Wonderful Life. I mean, for all the reasons we've talked about in our few minutes of talking about this movie. And yeah, it's, I like this one. Big fan of it. In snake fashion, is it
that's you for it's you one? You get your number
okay,
one.
Okay, great. So excited. So this is also my, like, I'm a little biased on this one. So people can totally argue whether this is, you know, the best Jimmy Stewart. But my favorite Jimmy Stewart movie is Vertigo. And because it's just such a multi-layered performance from him. I mean, it's a great movie. It's visually stunning. It's Hitchcock, all the things. But he, you know, starts out as a really... It should be a rather pragmatic, hard-boiled, you know, law enforcement officer, and yet he's struggling with a phobia like vertigo for a really legitimate reason. And his relationship with Midge and kind of their banter and sort of, you know, what comes over him with Kim Novak's character in both of her forms. So, yeah, I just think that he, like, there just even that moment where he's sitting there in the courtroom being sort of blasted by the judge for, or judged by the judge for, and he's just sitting there and he has this look on his face like, what? I mean, I just think he has a lot of layers in this particular film that he goes from being funny and charming to like really disturbed and it's believable. So...
Well, because yeah. He's so clueless in every movie, so there it makes it more believable.
So this one, I was kind of like, "Wow, okay."
Here it works.
Yeah, kind of showed off his range.
Yes.
And my number one, again, independently decided, of course, but also Vertigo. He's just so damaged in this movie, and I hate to see it, but I love to see it because he does it really well. You know, this is a man dealing with several layers of trauma, and he is performing all of those layers as they start stacking up, and it's just really impressive. It's an incredible performance by him, so that's the one.
And he's
for me.
Frightening when he's like pushing her up the stairs.
Oh yeah, the meltdown is truly insane,
which is powerful for someone. You're like, oh, it's Jimmy Stewart, he's so cuddly, or like, you know, he's just such a good guy, and for him to actually be like, wow, okay, that would be frightening. You are frightening me right now.
He's borderline Heath Ledger as the Joker. I mean, it's very yeah. intense. It's an all-consuming performance.
So you're saying it's unfortunate he was no longer alive in 2008 to have taken on the role of the Joker.
Oh, I would really be curious to see that. I've never done that dream casting, but I'm curious. I would
feel
like
he could have done it based on the performance in Vertigo. I think he could have been really... Like, he might have gotten really into that. Like, just, like, you know, remove any barriers of having to be a specific type.
Right, that's true. But I think his generation's Batman was, you know, Cesar Romero. So, a little difficult.
Right, very different.
Incredible. You know, so evil and wicked a bad guy that he refused to shave his mustache. No, we must just paint over it. Sorry.
There you go.
Well, we weren't in the, you know, morally ambiguous main character era of a post-fractured network viewing audience.
The anti-hero, yes. True.
The anti-hero. That is correct.
All right, great. Thank you very much for those lists, guys. Would you like to once again tell people where they can find you guys?
Absolutely. Our show is called Old Movie Time Machine. You can find us on all the usual podcasting platforms. We're available there for you to listen to. Also on YouTube as well. And please follow us on the Instagram at Time Machine Podcasts.
All right. And finding me is very simple. Just do a quick search for Move Around Minute. You can find me on Facebook. You can find me on Twitter. And you can find me on my website, movearoundminute.com. So you guys feel like coming back in tomorrow to finishing off this week?
Tomorrow. Let me just check my day planner. Yeah, I could do tomorrow. Okay. Let's do
all right.
it.
Excellent. So until tomorrow, hot dog.
Hot dog.
Hot dog.
I love you truly, truly dear. Life with its sorrow, life with its tears.